What's up, sports fans? Welcome to Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fans. I'm King Cash, joined as always by my good friend and co-host, the one, the great JVZ.
As I forgot to watch the UFC event last night, but I heard you did.
Yeah, for once I actually watched it because Panda and a couple of the other kids were watching it in Discord, so we watched it together. It was long. Because the pre-fight card was like 10 or 15 matches long, and had some good fights, but you know, it came down to the three big fights, the Nunez fight, the Adesanya fight, and I forget what the other fight was, but the other fight, I gotta go pull
the
card.
Sterling one.
Yeah, the Sterling one.
Yeah, versus Sterling.
Yeah, that one ended in a weird fashion. It was kind of a back and forth, and then Sterling was kind of playing the turtle game. He was just kind of staying on his back or staying on his knees, staying what they call I forget the proper term for it, but basically being a what they call like a turtle, lay and pray. Yeah. Where he's trying to bait this guy into coming into the ground and fighting him there because he wasn't winning on his feet. So he's looking to take the fight to the ground, and obviously his opponent doesn't want to do that. His opponent doesn't want to go to the ground, doesn't want to do that. And is trying to get this guy to come back to his feet. And he may have gotten some kind of mixed messages from his corner, which is what a lot of people said, because when that guy's on his knees, like kind of planted, you're not supposed to strike him. You can wrestle him. You can do other things to try to either, you know, get him to the ground or get him back to his feet. Try to cause some kind of neutral thing that the ref will stand you guys back up. But yeah, he takes some bad advice from somewhere and throws a knee at this guy. And they try to give him a couple seconds to regain himself. And at first I thought he was just kind of taking the time to kind of be like, oh, I'm going to lay here and catch my breath. But he kind of stayed down for a while. And then the ref ends the match. And I figure it was going to just kind of be a null and void, but they were like, no, it's a straight up DQ. He threw a strike and he wasn't supposed to in that situation. So he loses his title.
Yeah. From what I've seen in various chats, it's a lot of people are saying like, wow, even Joe Rogan was disgusted by that. So it's,
yeah. It was weird because it's one of those situations. I think even the most, as our show says, fly by night sports fan knows that that's not a situation where you do that. You could sprawl with him and kind of like push him down to the ground and take strikes, but he's just prone in that position, kind of, or defenseless in that position, and I don't know. It was just such a weird ending because, like, no one was happy, right? Like, no one in that situation is happy. Because it's just ugly, I guess, is the best way to describe it.
Yeah. And yeah, it just not only to, like, end the fight on a disqualification, but, like, on a fairly confusing one. I guess confusing just because nobody knew what was going on, not. I think I'm sure the audience could probably tell that, you know, that was an illegal move. And mm-hmm. I guess if you're new to the sport, then maybe you're not entirely aware of what you can and cannot do, because in like a street fight, that would totally be something you should do. But for this, it would be, you know, for professional combat between two willing fighters, it's definitely a dick move to pull something like that. And so totally against the rules, total disqualification. What else happened during this event? I think,
so the other like, big card thing was Amanda Nunes stepping back into the octagon, and ending her fight in the first round in like in a few minutes, showed that she had dominant striking still, and then her opponent went to the ground, and her opponent being the taller person, being
like a
6 foot
taller, right?
Yeah, like 6 foot tall. You would think it would be more advantageous for her to be on the ground, being taller, being having more control of her limbs, but no, Amanda Nunes just goes to the ground with her and chokes her out, and in a really, really dominant fashion, just out wrestled her opponent, and it was a sight to see. Like, there were a lot of fights, and I think even in that main card, like, that was the best fight, like, by far. That was just the best fight that there was, and it just like, there's really nothing else to say about it. It was just so good. It was so clean. It was like what you expect to see from somebody who's classified as a dominant fighter. Yeah. So now, it was just really good.
She's still champion in two different weight classes, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, this is... It's going to be a while before somebody dethrones her.
Yeah, so she, I think this one was middleweight, I want to say, was the what the title was for in the weight class. And everyone said, like, there's literally no one to challenge her. And that's what she said too. She's just like, I'm just waiting for somebody to come up, because I'm sure it'll happen at some point, but right now there's nobody.
That's what we said about Ronda Rousey, and then Holly Holm kicked her in the face, and
well, yeah, and so did Amanda Nunes. Yes. but see, this is that's the difference, right? Is Ronda Rousey fought kind of a bunch of nobodies, and then fought two really good people, and you saw a stark difference, right?
Yeah,
and then same thing with Holly Holmes, right? She fought a bunch of nobodies, and then fought Ronda Rousey, and you saw her dominance, but then she fought Amanda Nunes, and you see what that is. And I think that's just been the thing, right? Is of that minimal who's who right now that they have in women's MMA, Amanda Nunes has gone through everyone legitimately.
Yeah.
And just continues to show dominance. So, like, and it's not even in just one discipline, right? Like, it's not even just in her wrestling. It's not even just in her striking. It's not even just in her ground game. Like, she is just across the board really scary. So,
yeah. All right. That's chalk that up as wait and see, like we always do.
Yeah. So they have to find her an opponent. Like that's legitimately what it is. Either they're going to have to cross and find someone who's like a top kickboxer right now, or like some kind of top wrestler, and talk them into coming into the UFC, which is then going to be bad, right? Because then they're going to have none of the other classifications of skills that it would take. But, you know, maybe. Because that's really all they're pulling from right now, even in other weight classes, right? For even for their middleweight class against Israel Adesanya, like, they've been pulling people from kickboxing and other disciplines. Like, he had to go up in weight even for the fight he fought on this card, right? He was fighting at 205. He didn't even make weight. I think he came in at 200. And he lost that fight, but he had to go for a weight class that isn't necessarily his normal working weight. And he just kind of had a guy lay on him for a couple of rounds and lose that way. Like, it wasn't even like he kind of stood toe to toe with this guy. He had control of the standing bits of the fight for the most part in most of the rounds, but you know, he had to start looking for challenges elsewhere because there's literally no one in his preferred weight class. So it just happens that way sometimes.
Yeah. So DJM points out that Clarissa Shields is, who also won her boxing fight last night. And I think became the first person to unify two different weight class championships in women's boxing. Or I think in any men or women's boxing. She is now training to be an MMA fighter, and So potentially she could be an opponent on the horizon, but I think she's got to fight some tin cans first before they can promote this as like a mega matchup between her and Nunes.
Which will be the good slash bad thing, right? Is they're going to give her at least maybe one or two kind of walk in the park fights, right? Like they're going to put opponents in her that they think she could easily defeat, rather than actually putting like challengers in front of her. And I think there are some, like, if you're going to bring somebody from another discipline, you should throw somebody at them that's going to give them a challenge and give them something to go back and work on. Because you do that, and then that person wins those two fights, and you're like, cool, we'll let you challenge Amanda Nunes. And you do that, and you go in there, and she's just going to get fucking decimated somewhere, right? Like, maybe she has better striking, but then she just gets out-wrestled. Like, so it's just, it's rough, man. It's real rough.
All right. Let's move on to the NBA All-Star Game, which is scheduled for today.
Yeah, that thing that we kept saying, like, that shouldn't happen. Hopefully that's not going to happen. That'd be big dumb if that happens. And here we are. Guess what? It's big dumb and it's happening.
Yeah, it's happening. They're squeezing all these events into one night. Both Philadelphia 76ers players, Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, are out for the game because their barber got COVID.
Why does everyone's barber have COVID?
I mean, it's one person that comes into contact with a lot of people.
I guess. Because that was the same thing for the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think another football team had that same problem. And lock these barbers down, man. One barber per head. I'm going with the JVZ rule, man. One barber per head, man.
Yeah, and it's...
You don't cut anyone else's head. You just... Only mine. That's it.
Yeah, so we got very, very dangerously close to the disaster scenario where the entire, in this case, like, all-star, the top 15 or top 30 NBA players all catch COVID. Although some of them have caught it before, so like guys like Kevin Durant would probably be okay, but it's... But yeah, it's dangerously close to that. But both players have been ruled out, and I think both have been isolated since they got to Atlanta. So hopefully this doesn't spread. But I mean, the rest of this is kind of a mess too. The NBA is issuing cease and desist letters to anybody that is advertising an NBA All-Star party. Which is like over 200 different places around the Atlanta area. Hotels are completely booked. It's like, this was supposed to be not a destination event. The NBA said that this is something where they're going to bring the players in and then get them out as quickly as possible. They're only doing this to get the TV money. But yeah, that hasn't stopped fans from flocking to the city. Even though there's not supposed to be any parties, there's not supposed to be anything. We are so close to, we're like tantalizingly close to the end of this pandemic, and everybody is still fucking shit up. So
it's not surprising. I mean, this is what we said it would be, right? Like at the height of it, this is what we said we expected to have happen. yeah, as JVZ says, don't want a bunch of black men not to party in Atlanta. Good luck with that.
EJM said that, not me.
I'm not going to take credit for that. No, don't take credit for that. But yeah, like telling people not to party anywhere around any sporting event
in general,
yeah, is like astoundingly dumb. How much like people are like, yeah, but it's my cat's birthday. I gotta celebrate, man. We gotta get drinks. I gotta I'm gonna call a caterer. I gotta get it in. It's my cat's birthday. It's a once in a lifetime event.
Let's all get haircuts together and go see.
All right, so going on from there, what do we got? Oh, the Twitter poll that we had for the collectibles that we've been talking about. I also bought more baseball cards that I haven't opened. They're sitting on my desk.
I think last week I mentioned, or last 2 weeks ago, I mentioned I had a Darius Garland Top Shot that I bought for $15.
So for the recap, right, we talked about this new collectible idea, which is basically
non-fungible gifts. Tokens is the technical term for digital collectibles, but in particular, these are marketed by the NBA with the company called NBA Top Shot, run by Dapper Labs, who, if you remember CryptoKitties, that's the same company. But yeah, I guess the marketplace is taking off on this, and this is not investment advice, so don't hold us to any of this. But for full disclosure, I had a Darius Garland one, which was, I think, like a random layup, and I bought that for $15, and couple days after the show sold it for $49. So that's not to like show off my investment prowess. That's more just an indicator of just how ridiculous the market is right now. We asked in the poll, like, how much would some of you guys spend for a digital collectible for your favorite player? And and we got a pretty decent response. About 44% of you said $1 to $10, which is pretty reasonable, I think. Another 22% said $10 to $50. Another 22% said $50 to $100, and 11% of you said $100. So, I think part of why markets like this take off is because there's always people out there that are willing to spend a bunch on it. And the more that I've been kind of thinking about it over the last couple of weeks, I think where there's going to be big money in this, I don't know like what the, if this is like I know this is somehow tied to cryptocurrency, and I know cryptocurrency has a way of becoming more scarce over time.
Well, so it's more tied to like the blockchain and unique, making it unique and giving people rights to own it by basically giving it a unique identification, like a chain, right?
And so there's a way that like all that stuff, where it becomes harder to mine those over time. And that's what creates the scarcity. So I don't know like whether, the NBA has a gigantic library of video clips throughout their entire history. So, they can choose to release these dinky little layups here and there. But I wonder how much they could get for like some of the more meme-y moments, like LeBron, gesturing wildly at J.R. Smith because he didn't call a timeout.
I'd pay $100 for Malice at the Palace.
Yeah, so stuff like that. Like that's the thing. Like everybody has one of those. Maybe not DJM, but everybody else has one of those. That's like, you know what? Just for kicks, I'd drop $100 on this, and just so I could tell other people.
It has to be specifically, I mean, not Ron Artest, but Meta World Peace laying on the announcer table. That's the GIF I want to own forever.
Yeah.
Like keeping that one. Yes. But we were also talking about, I was going over this with some of the kids in the Discord, and we were talking about it, and we were talking about the, like, Is it just a, and I think this is something that has to come later down the line, right? Is it just a unique identifier attached to a gift that you then own, right? Or do you own that? Do you, like...
You do not own rights to this. Like, it's... I think the best way that I've thought of to describe it is, like, it's... It, I just want to go back to like the sports card analogy, but instead of a picture printed on the card, it's a GIF printed on the card.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's like the only, everything else translates except for the fact that, you know, with a physical thing, you have to worry about the condition of it. And you have to worry about the authenticity of it. And with this, you don't have to worry about that because all that's tied to the blockchain and it's all digital. So you don't have to worry about, you know, this GIF is no longer in mint condition.
See, the other thing with cards, right, is it also like the stat lines that are on the cards are also part of what makes them unique, right? Because it's like, yeah. Like, oh, this is where this person was at this moment, and then they became like amazing from there, like, or whatever. But like,
there's less of a thing now, just because, I mean, that was interesting to me as a kid, certainly. Mm-hmm. But I think now it's like you can get stats from anywhere. But then again, you can get that GIF anywhere too. So it's at the end of the day, it is only valuable because people believe it's valuable. And for right now, people believe it's incredibly valuable. So I did buy more. Even though you can get these gifts anywhere, I did buy more. And I'm just like, I'm just enjoying the fun of this and collecting. But I also
What do you have now?
I have a random clip from James Ennis, and then also another Mike Conley one, the NBA All-Star Mike Conley now, finally got that off his back, and then a Devin Booker one that's actually like, I think lowest price right now is over $100 on that, so it's I gotta offload that before people figure out that that this is gonna fall apart.
No, we just said that, dude. I'm like, he doesn't own the actual rights to it, so you can't DMCA people.
Yeah, yeah. If anything, it's like they're on top of me not like owning the exclusive rights to it. There's like the quote unquote rare ones have like 5,000 of them, so it's you know, and not all of those are on the marketplace at the same time. But
I guess Kaz, that's kind of my point, Kaz. Yeah, you own this, but what are you getting out of it? What's the investment?
Yeah, it's the only investment is the scarcity of it.
Yeah, which is arbitrary, right?
Because it's totally arbitrary. Which is at best arbitrary and at worst non-existent because it's a goddamn video on the internet.
Yep.
Look, all right, hold on. Nothing all right, DJM, right? Follow me with this. You're going to hate this, but follow me with this, right? The Daigo moment, right? I was looking at that video the other night, right?
Okay, him, yes, him for everyone out there, that's Evo moment 37, right, Kaz?
Is it? Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, him parry blocking the Chun Li ultimate.
Okay, yes, that is Evo moment 37.
So,
right.
Say they issue 100 of those. Number 37 of that is going to be incredibly valuable just for the fact that it's number 37.
Yeah.
Just like somebody is going to enjoy the novelty of having that. More than one person is going to enjoy the novelty of that. And then they are going to try to outbid each other. And all of a sudden, this thing that is nothing, like it's not tangible or anything, becomes valuable because these two idiots bidding on this thing believe it's valuable.
Kaz, and you're right. You're right. I fucking hate this.
but moments like that, right, are in a sense kind of starting to be lost, right, on newer generations of people. And I think sometimes these weird senses of collection is what makes people sometimes dive into history, right?
I think that's fair because that's kind of how I know a lot of my baseball history is from cards from like the early 90s.
Mm.
So
these things sometimes have a great, you know, sense to them. But I agree. I agree. It's dumb, but it's the world we live in right now.
I listened to only half of a podcast before I talked about it last time. I listened to the rest of it since then. And the one thing is the NBA is looking heavily into crypto, and they were looking to create some sort of cryptocurrency for themselves. So like people can spend this, you know, on NBA games or on merchandise or on, you know, game tickets, stuff like that. So if they somehow tied this to that, you know, NBA coin or something like that, if they somehow tied this to that, then that is a way of giving these things a more tangible value. Like, if you collect a Top Shot for every single player on the team, then you can exchange that for, you know, the lowest level season ticket package or something like that. So then that makes it worth collecting. That makes it worth, that can get you something tangible for that. And then at that point, there's at least some minimal thing that you can get for these things if you actually go through the effort and money to expended to actually acquire all these, which for now is a lot. But I think once they release more of these, they will become a little bit less expensive. And so I think that is one way that they can at least attach a floor to this, that at the very least, we can actually, I would say we have not spent more time talking about this and thinking about this than I think there are still like a lot of reporters that are doing think pieces on this and trying to throw money in just to figure out what's going on. And that was like us, or at least me, 2 weeks ago. And I feel like we're getting to more of an established place on this. I think the wait and see part of this is, what are other sports leagues going to do? Because when I think of sports cards, I think of baseball cards, because those have existed for a long time, and baseball is nowhere on this right now.
And as we've said, baseball needs to be fucking somewhere, because where it is terrible.
All right, let's move on to our next story. This is a follow-up to a wait-and-see story, but the Atlanta Dream, which is Kelly Loeffler's team, has been sold to Larry Gottensteiner and Susanna Bear. And also in that ownership group is former Atlanta Dream star Renee Montgomery, who is seems to be everywhere at this moment, because she's been a studio analyst for the Atlanta Hawks for a couple of years now. She's been all over on social justice issues. She took the 2020 season off. She's one of the players that took the 2020 season off to focus on that. While all this was happening with Kelly Loeffler, she tried to meet with Kelly Loeffler and was denied that, and now ended up as part of the ownership group that eventually bought the team from her. So this marks the first time that a former WNBA player has entered the ownership ranks. So that's something that we're always talking about on this show, is if we want ownership to, like, we always complain about, you know, different policies that different leagues have, but it's the owners that control so much of that. So if we want some of that stuff to change in a positive direction, if we want some of that stuff to change in a direction that benefits the players more, then we got to get more former players into these ownership groups. And it can't just be Michael Jordan.
No, because I don't know if he's a great example of what we want there.
Yeah, and so, you know, we've been seeing a lot of cross sport ownership. I think this is the first story in a while where a former player has managed to buy into the same sport that they played in. So this is only, I think, since probably Derek Jeter is the last example of that. And or the last example of successfully doing that. I think A-Rod has tried and failed to buy the Mets. But yeah, this is a good sign for the WNBA, A, that they were able to find a buyer, B, that they were able to get a bad owner out. And we've talked about how hard that is to do, but they managed to find a way to successfully do that, even though Kelly Loeffler had dug her heels in and said that she wasn't going to sell. So I think this is a positive move in a
look. All step this in does is give me more false hope that one day I could have new ownership of the Knicks.
It's
you know, maybe Patrick Ewing buys the Knicks one day. That'd be great. I'd enjoy the fuck out of that.
I think he wants to be a coach for now, so maybe not him, but
that's a terrible idea.
Maybe Carmelo Anthony.
Fuck no. I like Melo, but no. Don't wish that evil on me.
Like the people that have made NBA money in Stephon Marbury. Yeah.
I'd take Latrell Sprewell over fucking Carmelo right now.
Yeah, well, Latrell Sprewell had trouble feeding his family, so on his massive income. So I don't think he's got money to buy the next. Like the people that played in not the people that played in our childhood, but the people that have played in recent years and retired recently, those are the ones that have made the guys that are made like $30 million a year. And those are the ones that have the money to buy into ownership groups and then eventually grow their stake to the point that they can buy a team.
Yeah.
So
I mean, DJ makes a point. He like Stephon Marbury could like get some Chinese investment and use that if he wanted to make a good offer on the Knicks.
Yeah.
That would not be a far flung possibility. I mean, I don't think that wouldn't be too far off. I don't think he's going to. I don't think that's going to happen.
But Stephon Marbury is currently the head coach of the Beijing Royal Fighters.
Yeah. He's pretty locked in
I've said before, Stephon Marbury is a Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
he got kind of a bad rap.
Yeah, but he's the way he's managed to grow a sport in a market where it was not quite as good before. He's helped turn China into a legitimate lower tier league when compared with the NBA. Along the same lines as, you know, the EuroLeague in Australia, and it's on that.
However, guys,
however,
just a little bit. In 2017, Stephon Marbury was and looks to be still is part of the ownership group of the Beijing Lions of the China Arena Football League. So, I'm looking into this, guys. I'm gonna do some detective work. Okay, we'll wait and see on this one.
Can we,
Kaz? Kaz,
we could take a Starberry sponsorship. I'm just saying, like, what do we got to do?
Because I love you, I'm going to look into this, Kaz. I'm going to look into this.
I'll start wearing Starberries. I don't care. I'll get in fights. Like, let's go.
Well, I mean, I'm not a shoe person, but I like the idea of Starberries just because they're like $30. So it's not like, you know, these shoes that get made for like $2 that then get sold for $200. But to drag this back, Renee Montgomery is also the co-owner of the fan-controlled football league's Beasts.
That's the Marshawn Lynch team, right?
Yeah, the Marshawn Lynch team, the team that I am also on and failed to get an ownership stake in. But the team that lost last night to a Josh Gordon Hail Mary, he's back.
Oh, I think I just saw a clip of that on Twitter.
Yeah. So I mean, that league is very successfully managed to hype itself up, and not only that, it has managed to strike a balance between between kind of its own talent and then like I want to say like celebrity level talent of guys like Johnny Manziel and Josh Gordon. They put both those guys on the same team. I think she's got a good stake in that. She's also joining a Crooked Media podcast called Take Line with Jason Concepcion, formerly of NBA Desktop. So I think, you know, she's at this moment, you know, her playing career is over, but she's her face is going to be everywhere now, both as part of this ownership group, as part of the Beast's ownership group. And she's going to help use that platform to grow the recognition for the Atlanta Dream, and as part of that grow, get more eyes on the WNBA as well. So that's always a good thing.
Yeah, definitely.
So, let's move on to some labor talk, because I think this is kind of a theme for some of the stories that came out the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
One of the more inciting ones was NFL Network's Jen Slater. I think she was trying to do something nice, and she tweeted about an internship opportunity at a Dallas-Fort Worth area performance center. It was an unpaid internship, and she presented it like, you know, this is a massive opportunity. And but then that sparked a lot of backlash because it was an unpaid internship for this performance center that could presumably afford this kind of work. So she got a lot of backlash. I think that kind of sparked the discussion of a lot of media members actually get their start with unpaid internships. And then that caused a lot of people to kind of dive into why that is the case. Like, why do so many media members feel like this is the way that you have to get your foot through the door by working for free for a little bit of time before, so you can build up your resume? And, you know, why is it that such a large percentage of media members have that experience? And it's, mm-hmm. you know, and then that kind of falls to the people that don't have the ability, that can't afford to work unpaid for a little bit of time, are the ones that end up dropping out because they have to go take other jobs in order to feed themselves.
Right.
And so there,
it's like a catch 22 game, right? Like, yeah. It's one you kind of got to kind of know somebody, and two, you have to have opportunity to be given opportunity, right? So you have to have the opportunity to be able to it's that old adage of like where like these things come from of like you should be grateful rather than like whatever. So you should be grateful for this opportunity to be able to do this, but being able to do that opportunity now means you have to have some kind of backing already, right? Like either parental or some kind of socioeconomic status that allows you the freedom to do a 6-week course of unpaid internship with, you know, for free.
Yeah. Like, so I think I'm, based off of the details of this, I'm assuming it was like, you know, a couple hours twice a week for 6 weeks. So like I did the rough math on that of like, you know, what that would be with minimum wage, well, with the national minimum wage. I should have looked up what Texas's minimum wage was, but and that comes out to like $180. So like, you mean to tell me that, you know, this performance center is doing all this work and doing all this work with perspective draft prospects, and you know, they want to make all this video stuff, and this is supposed to, they have all these connections that you could presumably get by working in this place, so they have all those contacts and they can't afford to pay somebody $200 to do a bunch of video work for 6 weeks. And you know, I have a hard time believing that, and but it's like it's that mentality that you know, that atmosphere that gets created around sports media that leads people to believe that you have to be able to you have to be willing to work for free to get your foot in the door. And it's that, I mean, if you look at like the demographics of sports media versus the demographics of the athletes they cover, or the demographics of, you know, the nation at large, and you see like, why is there a difference, and why do so few sports media members come from poor families? Like, and I think it's stuff like this that leads to that. And it kind of just, like you said, it works itself into a vicious cycle, because those media members form a big part of how we view sports stories in general, because they're the ones that craft these narratives. So it's, you know, to Slater's credit, I think she kind of backed off a little bit. She got really mad because people came after her family, you know, for being rich. But aside from that, she also did acknowledge, like, hey, maybe nobody should have to work for free. But she also laced that with, nobody should work for free, but people need to take whatever opportunities they can get.
Yeah. It's
a double-edged sword there. And
it very much is. And I think she got kind of the bad end of it. I put it more on the people looking for the work than the person putting out the message, right? Yeah. Because for her, it's probably the same route she went to. And she probably doesn't, she, like, there's probably a lack of understanding on her part. And this is my thing, like, when people go after people, I'm always like, teach, don't preach, kind of sense, or teach, don't yell, is what I like to say. Like, hey, cool, that's a great opportunity, but, you know, that's an opportunity that not a lot of people can take right now. Like, you know, and that statement right there is just more than enough to get your point across, but not also attack that person. Like,
yeah, I feel like this discussion did help get like all those dynamics out in front of people. And so hopefully the next time an organization tries to put out an opportunity like this, they're willing to put a little bit of money behind it. And you know, like that, I mean,
especially now, you know what I mean? Like, especially now.
Like, it's, I mean, 'cause she also tried to say like, oh, I mean, it's, you know, due to the pandemic, like, you know, it's a rough economy out there. And it's like, well, if it's a rough economy, then people are having trouble feeding themselves. So like, it is better financially to go work at McDonald's than it is to go take this opportunity. So like, you know, it's people need to consider that when they put these opportunities out there, and they need to consider, who are they losing? That's the big thing. Like, when I talk about all these stories about like how much people are getting paid, whether it's like WNBA salaries or whatever, or minor league baseball salaries, it's like, are you paying people enough to stay in your sport, to stay in your industry, to do what, to be able to afford to do what you're asking them to do? Or are you going to lose these people, potentially talented people, because they have to go take a quote unquote normal job somewhere else just to survive? It's just something to think about. It's something that obviously Kevin Mather, former president and CEO of the Seattle Mariners, put a lot of thought into. I think the way he fell on that particular subject is a lot different than the way most of the rest of us feel about it. But he had no problem talking about that for 45 minutes in front of the Bellevue Breakfast Rotary Club, completely unprompted, by the way. He was just meeting with them and then just decided to talk all this stuff. And that managed to piss off so many people in baseball circles that he is now resigned. But I mean, some of the
he did a lot of no-nos in this talk.
It was a lot. And it wasn't like he got caught by a reporter who asked him a pointed question or anything like that. He was just bragging.
Yeah.
I think some of the more, on a racially offensive front, he talked about not wanting to, criticizing the English skills of some of his players and not wanting to pay for translators and saying that, all of a sudden when he's threatened to stop paying for these translators, their English got better and stuff like that. Just to make the point that everybody else has made about the story, like, yes, a lot of foreign players who, or at least non-English first language players, can speak English. They can speak English well enough to communicate with their teammates. They can speak English conversationally, but then when you put a microphone in front of them, in front of the media, that's when they want to make sure that their words don't get twisted. Kevin Mather could have used a translator in between the words that came out of his mouth and the words that went out to the Rotary Club. If he had one of those, then this thing probably wouldn't have been so controversial, because the translator would have just said, no, I'm not saying that.
But even if, with that like scenario, you got to realize, like, most of the time you're cherry picking like good to great players from other countries, right? Like,
yeah,
whether it's from Korea or South America or Japan or whatever, right? Where they have to communicate with teams that they play with there, so they spend the majority of the time speaking the native language there, and then they're like, hey, we're gonna give you this big contract to come uproot your life and play in America. Like, it's not like, oh, cool, all right, let me learn English today so I get on that. No, it takes time. Like, it takes time to learn language and learn nuance of language too. So, like, yeah, they might be, like you said, be able to speak it conversationally, but like coherently, and understand every little nuance that you throw at them, or every little like weird diction that is new to them. No, they're not going to always understand those things. So yes, you need someone there that can then translate those things into a perspective that they can understand. God damn it.
In a way that the media isn't going to take it and run with it and create controversy. Like, it's, I mean, mostly what he was talking about this from a perspective of, like, I don't want to pay $75,000 for a translator for this person anymore, which is weird, because it's like you're paying this person, millions of dollars, but then you're going to blink at paying $75,000 so that they can communicate well with the media and don't create any controversy from that. That's just like a weird, it's a weird Pennywise pound foolish thing. That was kind of a theme of this. Like, it seemed like he was bragging about the ways that the Seattle Mariners were avoiding spending money. He even called their current third baseman, Kyle Seager, overpaid, which is also a very weird thing to say publicly. He even acknowledged, all but officially acknowledged, he called his ace pitcher boring. He basically acknowledged that they were manipulating the service time of a couple of their prospects, Jared Kelenic,
which is something we've been talking about for a lot of teams.
Yeah. Definitely saying the quiet part out loud. He talked about, like, the team's financial status during the pandemic. Like, every team is struggling out there, but he said, in a bragging way, like, the Mariners are struggling less than other teams because they kept their payroll so low. So it's like, the teams should not brag about low payroll. That is like bragging about being cheap.
That's what he's doing.
Yeah. And it was just so weird about, like, how he was saying all this stuff, like he was so proud of it. And then as soon as this leaked, it was, it's like, Major League Baseball executives were mad because he basically confessed to doing the things that every team is doing. So they're mad about it. The Players Association is half mad about it. They're mad because it's happening, but also happy because now they have a bunch of evidence that this is happening going into their labor negotiations next year. The collective bargaining agreement expires this year. The specific players that he mentioned, especially the ones in the minor leagues, can probably file grievances now because there is a lot more concrete evidence that they're being fucked with. It's, you know, just a totally messy situation overall. On top of that, I think 2 years ago, or in 2018, Mather was a part of a sexual harassment scandal that he had to settle on. So there's questions of, like, why did the Mariners even keep him around after that? So it's this whole thing is a mess. And but we might see the ripple effects of this mess. We might see that carry all the way into labor negotiations for next year. The Players Association, at least when I was a kid, the MLB Players Union was supposed to be like this really powerful union. You know, they managed to, they held the line and even held out through canceling a World Series.
Yeah.
And they were willing to do that. And it seems like they've dropped the ball in the last couple of years. We've talked at length about how baseball needs a salary floor. And how, like, right now they are so far apart from the owners, who we've talked about being total cheap bastards. So it's, you know, now throw into the mix the fact that there is clear, concrete evidence of this kind of manipulation, and we'll see what kind of effect that has on negotiations. I don't know if the players can leverage this into getting some sort of concession, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, like, this definitely something should come from this, because this is the thing we have been talking about with baseball, right? The weird bullshit that owners are doing, and it is, like, specifically these things. And, like, I don't know if this man just had a brain fart or had some kind of, like, weird, like, moment of clarity, just blurted it out, kind of liar style. But yeah, this is all the shit that we've been talking about people doing and, like, getting away with that just needs to stop, because this is this type of shit that is literally hurting the profile of baseball, right? Like, these people think this is cool because they're like, oh, look how much money we're not spending, but then at the same time, baseball is losing revenue overall because nobody wants to watch it because of shit like this, because it's the game is getting boring because you're not putting your best players out there. You're not putting your best, you're not putting your dollar behind your team being good, right? You're putting your dollar behind keeping your dollar. Like,
yeah. So it's a mess. All right. Let's move on to DGM wants to point out that some owners are businessmen and not fans. And
that's what I
like about this new crop of recent owners that we've gotten is that they at least go through the motion of at least wanting to pretend like they are fans like everybody else. It's not business people that are looking to buy the team and inflate the value and flip it, or buy the team and just sit on it and then just, I don't know, just turn a small profit every year or turn a big profit by not spending any money. It's people that actually want to go out and invest and make their team win. And so, like, I know the idea of, like, billionaires treating these teams like they're playthings is kind of weird, but I think that is kind of the best scenario, because if they tie their ego to the success of their team and not to the profit of their team, then that means they're going to invest in the team to try to make it successful.
Agreed.
All right. So I think if you've seen highlight clips of high school basketball players before, those clips probably come from a company called Overtime. So that company is now trying to start their own basketball league called the Overtime Elite. It is a league geared towards 16 to 18 year olds.
Yeah.
And they are at least advertising that they are going to pay $100,000 a year, plus a signing bonus, plus shares in the company itself, plus health and disability insurance. And if they don't, if the players choose not to pursue basketball as a career by the time they are 18 and graduate out of this program, then they get $100,000 in scholarship money. The only caveat is, you know, by taking this money, they forfeit their amateur eligibility, so they can't go back to playing high school basketball, and they can't play in the NCAA. So
right, because that was one of the big questions I had when I was looking through this, is like when you take monetary things like that, you can't go. I mean, would it?
If you take a gift, if somebody buys you dinner, as
but as I thought player, that was like just college. That's why it's weird to me. I thought that was just for college basketball.
Okay, I mean, it's so
all amateur athletics,
JVZ.
So that includes the levels below. Yeah.
So I was going to say in the pre-show that I had some pretty strong opinions on this, because I when I originally heard this story earlier this week and saw that it was for 16 to 18 year olds, my first thought was, these kids are not going to finish high school. And I'm seeing here in the show notes and as I read through it that Overtime will supply education staffers to help finish their high school diplomas. That's good. That's good. Yeah. But I also wonder about how much
the quality of education,
not just the quality of the education, but how dedicated are the kids going to be to finishing their high school diploma if they're so focused on basketball? That's what I'm wondering. Also, I think that, I don't know, something about this just, it kind of rubs me the wrong way, especially with the high school diploma part. Will these kids be getting endorsements? Can they get these things? I see that they'll have shares in Overtime, health insurance, and all of that. Also, where is the money coming from in all of this? I think Carmelo Anthony is one of the investors, and there are like a few other players, but I'm really wondering about where the money is coming from on this.
Yeah, probably a lot of ad revenue earned from you know, the clips that they've been using and spreading throughout the internet and essentially stealing and then making money off of.
I mean, in a way, this does kind of create an engine for more of that as well, because if they have their own league, then they have their own clips, and they can, you know, push those clips viral and then make even more ad money off of that. So yeah, I'm wondering like how big this league is going to be. Like, are they just gonna have like two teams or so? Because I mean, as much as I'm cool with these kids getting paid, like, this is six figures is a lot, and like what we've been advocating for is kind of like pay these people enough that they can survive on this and dedicate full time, not for not school age kids, for like adults, like pay them so that they can dedicate their full time work to this craft. You know, pay them so that this can be their job and they don't have to take a second job somewhere else bagging groceries just so that they can afford to pursue their dreams. In this case, these are going to be kids. And yeah, that does raise the question of like how, like for now, like even now in the NCAA, like student athletes that know that they're going to turn pro aren't taking the school part seriously. So in this case, if they're already going to be making money, it's kind of hard to do the whole, like, if you need to learn this stuff so that you can make money routine with people that are already making $100,000 a year. Then again, it's nice to see them compensated for this. I think, you know, had this been like, you know, they're going to pay him $50,000 a year or so, then maybe I'd feel a little bit differently about it. But I, you know, certainly more power to them if they can get more money. But I'm certainly wondering where the money is coming from as well, and how many kids they're going to be able to pay for this to keep this going. There's also just this weird, uncomfortable feeling of like, how young can you go with this concept? Mm-hmm. Like, at some point, are they going to, you know, extend this to, you know, all the way down to 14-year-olds, just anybody who's high school age?
I think there's a reason they went for 16 to 18, right? Because that's where most labor things kind of hit, and it allows for
a summer job.
Yeah. Whereas, like, because then you go into some weird things that like the entertainment industry has to go into for like schooling, like and tutoring, and it probably costs them more money to do that, and then it's probably harder to then profit off of that. Like it probably has, like, they probably had lawyers go through this, but monetarily, right, it's probably a bunch of investment and the ad revenue over time, because they're probably dipping into like things like YouTube ad rev, if they're on TikTok, the TikTok ad platform stuff. Like, there's probably money coming from a lot of places for them, for clips that they're just snatching off the internet and claiming that's their own, right? Because they have little to no overhead to make that money. So a lot of that stuff, like, it's stuff people have been talking about a lot recently, like the stealing or kind of overuse of gifts by companies for like advertisement and stuff, like where they kind of just take a gift that's on the internet or like some meme someone made, because they just take it and claim ownership of it, and you know, nobody really knows who actually owns it. So I think
at least according to this New York Times article, overtime does actually send a lot of people out to high school games to film stuff.
Okay.
So they probably, at least their branded content, I think a lot of it is their
I bet own... you like in their initial like coming up, they probably took a lot of clips, and then at some point, as their name started to get famous, somebody probably somebody was like, yo, that's mine, what the fuck? And they were like, oh shit, well, okay, we don't want that to happen again, like, let's just pay people a flat rate to go film a game, and then, you know, we take it, cut it up, spread it all over the internet, make a bunch of ads on it, watermark it, you know what I mean, like rights hold it and shit like that. So I mean, that shit is like easy, like it's not easy, let me not say that, but I've seen so much of the workings of those things that like I kind of know the footpath.
I think I'm just inclined to believe that overtime is one of the legit ones, at least to the point where they can make all this revenue and not get sued out of existence for it. And they have enough that they can actually create this league as a potential engine for more clips.
Yeah, they probably learned from watching other like people who have done some of the same things.
Yeah. So like on the similar lines, we've talked previously about the G League, formerly the G League Select team, now known as NBA G League Ignite. But that's the team that Jalen Green is on. He was one of those high school prospects that chose to forego the one and done year of college basketball play and go straight to the G League. And I think he's getting paid $500,000 a year for $500,000 for this season, and then he'll enter the NBA draft after this year. And he's joined by a couple other prospects who did the same thing as well. And then they filled out the rest of the team with NBA vets, or at least former NBA players, guys like Jarrett Jack and Amir Johnson.
So to connect these two things, would somebody be able to go from this overtime league to the G League?
I think that's the path, because they're talking 16 to 18 years old for this overtime league, but the age requirement for the NBA is 19. So there's like a gap year there. And those players can't go back to college during that year, or they can't play in college for that 1 year because they've lost their eligibility by taking this money. So I think that is either they have to go overseas, which some players have done, or which some high school players have done even before this overtime elite league has started, or they do the Jalen Green route and go into the G League, where I think if they're a highly touted prospect from overtime elite, then they could probably pull the same sort of $500,000 salary that that Jalen Green pulled this year. So it's, you know, and if this is a league where they actually manage to collect a lot of really high level prospects, then they can say that they're a good high school player playing against all the other great high school players, and use that to market themselves as, you know, as somebody that's worth investing a lot of money in. So as far as this G League Ignite team goes, like the performance, I think, has been pretty good. They managed to finish 8-7 in the G League bubble this year, which is good enough for eighth place, and that gets them a playoff spot. So they will face the number one seed Raptors 905 G League team in the first round of the playoffs. So I think overall this G League Ignite experiment has been a pretty successful one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've got these young prospects coming straight out of high school that are able to hang with at least at the middle level of G League talent. And, that bodes pretty well for their potential prospects as players in the NBA.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at all this and I kind of like the idea of this path, right? This is like, you good enough to get into this overtime league, you earn some money, right? Maybe it doesn't stick. Maybe you take some of that money and you still go to college, right?
They do get the scholarship on top of the, you know, presumably 2 years spent in this league, you get $200,000 from that. And then $100,000 to pay for college.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's...
Or you use that towards training, go to the G League. You know, you can hire NBA class trainers to help you develop, go to the G League, earn a little bit more money, see where your development is, go that route. I'm really impressed by this.
It's similar to like the academy pipeline in soccer around the world. So I think they're trying to create something like that, which, because some of those go that young, or even younger sometimes. So, or DGM points out major junior hockey in Canada. Mm-hmm. That pipeline exists. So I think we rely a lot on our educational systems to provide sports in this country. And we've seen that kind of creates a market for exploitation. And so this is potentially a path away from that. And so if at the very least, now these kids have more options to choose from, and so maybe that, you know, that this doesn't necessarily completely kill college basketball, but or high school basketball, but it kind of creates an alternative option for people who can't necessarily afford that route as well. So I think more options is always a good thing. All right. Let's get into some nerd shit. NFL overtime rules might be changing again. there's a proposal on the table now for recommended by the Baltimore Ravens. The way this is going to work is one team is going to choose where to put the ball, and the other team chooses whether to go on offense or defense. So you can get really aggressive. You can say, I'm going to put the ball on the 1 yard line, 1 yard away from the end zone. Then the other team picks, okay, I'm just going to go on offense then, and I only have to go 1 yard to score. So yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of mind games behind that of like, where do you put this ball so that the other team can't score right away if they choose to take the ball on offense, or the other team can't defend as well if your team ends up on offense. Overall, I like it just because there's like two elements to this rule. One team picks where to put the ball. The other team picks offense or defense, and that's it. And no more of this bullshit about like, oh, if you get the ball first, you can't score, and you kick a field goal, you don't win right away. You have to stop the other team first, and all this other nonsense surrounding the rule where it is now, where you can all, if you get the ball first, you can only win the game outright on a touchdown or a safety. And it's, I don't know, the current rule is too confusing, too many line items to this rule. If people adopt this one, then it's just one team picks the ball, one team places the ball, the other team chooses offense or defense. That's it. And first team to score wins.
Yeah, I don't know. It's so weird, man. I'd rather it just be like a set time, like just.
Yeah, 10 minutes. See, the problem is like, you get all these people complaining about like, if you don't get the ball first, then you quote unquote didn't get a chance to score. But then you get all these people coming out and saying, you know, but defense is part of the game too. So
it is. But it's like, I don't know. Like, it's so weird because, like.
Yeah, the current system came about because so many games were ending in a field goal by the team who won the coin toss.
Mm-hmm.
So it just seemed like these games were being decided by a coin toss. And. So now this at least adds kind of a strategic element to that. Or you could go the college route and say just every team gets the ball at a certain yard line and has to score and alternate possessions.
Yeah.
And that's been pretty successful. Nobody really complained about college overtimes other than maybe they should put the ball further back behind instead of just at the 25 yard line.
I kind of like that sense, right? Like you put it at like the 20-25, no kick, kick return or whatever. Would one team gets a chance to score if you know you can put points up, another team gets a chance, and then you just go from there, man. Like, and give each team 5 minutes on offense, right? So 10 minutes total, and that's it. And you just take the result.
Yeah, and I mean the XFL had a pretty good idea. I don't know if we got to see it tested out, but it was, you know, five goal line plays from each team and just like similar to penalty kicks. So at least both teams get an opportunity there to score. But yeah, I don't know. I like the wrinkle of this rule that like it still adds the defense is important element to this game. It's just a strategic wrinkle, and it puts a lot of onus on the coaching staffs and the analytics staffs to make a good strategic decision here. So, I don't know. Opinions are kind of all over the place on how NFL overtime should be settled. So, so we've got head on over to our Twitter account at twitter.com/sportsoddsends, and we've got a question out there about how you prefer to end overtime football games. And so respond to that. And if you got something cool, then we might talk about it on the show next time. But yeah, we're also trying to use that Twitter account a lot more. So please give that a follow, and we'll We're trying to funnel our individual sports tweeting over to that account, so to create a little bit more discussion and conversation. Once again, that's at Sports Odds Ends on Twitter. If you want to listen to this show live, we have a dedicated show account now, twitch.tv/sportsoddsandends. Sportsoddsandends.com if you want to hit up our website to find links to all of our previous stories and links to where you can subscribe to this podcast. Also, we've got a dedicated Discord channel now, so this is the place where you can submit stories that we might want to talk about throughout the week, and even if they don't end up on the show, we'll probably discuss it a lot there too. So like we want to do a lot more discussion outside of the show itself, and a lot more community engagement. So that's, head on over there and check those out. Patreon.com/sportsoddsandends if you want to support the show financially. Thank you to all of you guys who currently do that. And thank you to all of you who are listening live and who are listening in podcast form. We'll see you guys next time.